This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury, and as usual, I'm joined by my friends, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, everybody.
And that man with the news, it is Arif Ruse. Hi, Arif.
Hello, everybody.
A show in three parts, as per usual here on Cruise Control. We'll be starting off with a discussion about roads, because, you know, we need them. And should a company return back to Malaysia? We'll get to that. And then we have the Volvo XC40 Recharge. We have a discussion about that. And then up at the end, will new electric cars kill the snob appeal here in Malaysia? That's all coming up. First off then, some news from the government.
Exciting. So, remember late last year, seemed like every other week somebody was losing water supply because people were polluting stuff inside Iris Langor's pumping stations, essentially.
Yes.
And then we all laughed at the fact that to solve this, Iris Langor decided to buy some drones. I think it cost like 1.3 million each to monitor activities around their pumping stations. Mm-hmm. We all laughed at that. And then in January and in February, the floods, and the federal government announced that they will be investing in more drones to monitor and respond to floods and natural disasters in Malaysia.
Because they worked so well the first time around.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just this week, the Selangor government announced that they will be tackling our long-standing issues of bad roads and potholes with more drones and lasers. So
I can't wait for us to see how this is going to pan out. Have you got more details other than drones and lasers?
Nope. I mean, as far as I know, the source just came out from one publication, so I'm not sure.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, or maybe Daniel, you might be able to help me out a little bit here.
Yes,
you know,
please,
if I'm perhaps speaking out of turn. We don't need drones and lasers when everybody in the general public complains about the roads every single day. We just need a Twitter handle to say, oi, this is where the problem is. And then Kyrie, like he did before, can come and fill it in.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say you're wrong here because, and I'll tell you why you're wrong, is because I've just bought shares in the drone company.
Oh, I see.
Just and, as the announcement was made, right?
Yes. And I will message you guys the name of the company so you can buy shares. And okay, there's a very good reason why they should buy these drones because, you know, they're really cheap.
You remember last time you spoke about shares on this show, you got us into trouble. Buying shares and things, you know, let's not suggest that. Let's just say it was a joke.
It is a joke, by the way.
It's a joke.
But anyway, you know, $1.3 million for a drone, I think, is a very good price. It's very reasonable because, I mean, they're not cheap to make. You know, they're not coming from China, you know, and they have a lot of gold in it, a lot of diamonds in it and all that. So it's a really good drone. Anyway, I think that's, we can't change any of this. So let them go ahead.
Drones and late. I mean, it almost sounds like an exciting piece of news until you find out it's just really not, is it? It's just another waste of resources.
With lasers, I get it because, you know, maybe you need to scan how deep the pothole goes. Or maybe the soil movement and everything, but drones, don't know if that would be more accurate other than using our eyes.
I think the best solution, and no joking here, guys, is to get every single weekly cyclist to tell you how deep the potholes are, where they are,
shouldn't laugh at that.
Where they are, how big, how wide, and everything else, because they are the ones most affected by bad roadworks. Car drivers just lose a little bit of, you know, tire wear and wheel alignment. But the cyclists, they are falling over. They are getting injured.
Yeah.
And it's no joke.
Not just the cyclists, the motorcyclists as well. The scooter riders, Yes. But I can honestly tell you that when I leave my house, and if I'm driving towards BSC up that hill or anything like that, we encounter 44 potholes on the way there.
Can you give me the route? Because when I want to test drive a car, I can use that route.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Yesterday, I took my parents in the new C class, the worst road I know in KL. And weirdly, it's right in front of the biggest mansions in KL. I mean, it's a little bit off topic, but I discovered the main culprit of this is TNB. They dig up all the cables throughout the whole road of Jalan Ampang Hilir, Jalan Richie, that whole area.
Yeah.
And when they cover it up, you know, it's like putting mashed potatoes on your plate.
Yeah.
I'm just calling them out.
Yeah, well, I think you probably should, yeah. Anyway, enough about that. Yep. Drones and lasers. Folks, go look it up. It's going to be in one of your newspapers someday soon, sure. Right. Talk to me about this former Eastern European car company that might be making a comeback.
Okay. So a lot of people don't know, actually. Skoda has a brand Guardian in Malaysia. Okay. They've been the brand Guardian for more than a decade. It's Burmas. Burmas, the same people who do Mazda. And of course, more recently, they're doing Kia and Peugeot as well. But they were the last company to actually import in Skoda. They brought in the Octavia and the Octavia VRS. And they brought in the Skoda Superb. Mm. Now, all three cars did not sell well for a few reasons. Number one, you know, they were expensive because they were fully imported. Number two, Skoda is 100% owned by the Volkswagen Group. It's just like how they own Audi and Porsche and everything else. But Skoda, the factory and everything is 100% Volkswagen. Drivetrain technology, everything Volkswagen, is just design and execution. Now, the thing is, whatever Skoda was selling in Malaysia, Volkswagen had an equivalent vehicle, right? And the Volkswagen version was cheaper. So the reason why it was cheaper was because Volkswagen had local assembly. Also, they had economies of scale in terms of the number of cars they sold. So automatically, any Malaysian will say, why am I paying more for Skoda when the parent is cheaper? So after a while, Burmas gave up selling. But till today, you go to their after-sales center in Glenmary, they still have spare parts. They're still repairing Skodas. They're still keeping them on the road. Resale values are very bad because there's no branding and there's no new models coming in. But you see the owners driving these cars. And if you ever have a chat with them, they're actually very happy. The cars are well-built. They last long and they're very easy to maintain, you know? So, okay, put all that aside. Skoda has been sort of dormant in Malaysia. It's not making any noise. Nothing is happening. Price is not on their side and everything else. But now, I'm just suggesting this. You heard it here first. Now, if electric cars have no taxes in Malaysia, even though they're fully imported, this is a chance for Skoda to reemerge in Malaysia with just electric cars. And they've got two very good models based on the Volkswagen platform. And Volkswagen in Malaysia is not bringing in the electric car as yet. They have not made a firm decision or a firm commitment to bring in electric cars. Now, if that is happening, Skoda and Burmas can actually, say, import in a few hundred units and test the market. And if you look at the pricing, I did a very simple comparison in terms of how much it costs in Europe, putting a little bit of margin for transportation and after sales and everything else. The prices of these Skodas are not that bad, you know, really not that bad. For example, the high-end Enyaq Coupe RS. I mean, first thing they got to do is change the name, like, you know, but... E-N-Y-A-Q, Enyaq Coupe RS 4, which is the high-spec, high version model, which has, you know, a very good range, nearly 500 kilometer range.
Wow.
It is selling from 285,000 ringgit in Europe, which means it'll be around 325,000 ringgit here, which is slightly cheaper than the BMW iX. If you think about it, it's not too bad. Now, you are going to say then, Skoda name against BMW name. Well, Skoda is a European brand. In Europe, it's got a very high safety rating, very high reliability rating, very high retention rating with customers. So it's doing very well there. Now, they also have a sort of SUV version. You can see the pictures on DSF, or you know, you can go in and see. There's one here in a very nice, very, very light blue color. It's like a sporty wagon SUV. It looks a little bit like the Ioniq 5, you know? Now, that model with all the bells and whistles, very good range. If you look at the price, I was quite surprised at the price. It is just about 235,000 ringgit, which means it's slightly cheaper than the Ioniq 5 and the Volvo XC40 electric.
Interesting.
Now, if you think about it, if Burmas makes a decision to, say, bring in a few hundred units, test the market and see how it goes, I think it'll do pretty well. And then it'll spur them to bring in even more models from Skoda. Skoda has got some plug-in hybrid models, but of course, let's put aside all the petrol engine models that will not do well here because of the pricing, you know? So I think there is a good business case for Skoda to re-enter Malaysia as a pure electric car brand.
That is something interesting. We talk about, you know, brands and badging and everything quite a lot here on this show. And it would be interesting if we see a movement away from that. So you have your particular petrol-based vehicles and, you know, one type of branding, and then you have your electric vehicles and a different kind of branding. And if you are, I don't know, Skoda coming in again, and you can just sit on one side of that fence. Do you know what I mean, where I'm going with this?
Yes.
Sort of position themselves as a premium electric car.
Yes, almost exclusively electric. That would make for an interesting kind of business proposition, I'd imagine.
Mm. And you see, if you think about it, since they've not been around for more than a decade,
yeah,
there'll be a lot of Malaysians out there who've never heard of the Skoda brand. They're not, they've got no bad memories or, you know,
and they'll want to try.
You know, Czech Republic, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah.
Daniel, if I'm not mistaken, these new, like the Enyaq Coupe RS4.
Mm-hmm. That's not a mouthful at all, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. Are they based on the Volkswagen, you know, because they have the new ID3, ID brands?
They're all basically ID copies.
So essentially, Volkswagen themselves can kind of look at this and go, well, we're not sure whether electric cars are ready for Malaysia. Maybe Skoda can give it a go first, and then we'll introduce the ID brand later on.
Exactly. But you see, there's no official Volkswagen office here. There are dealers here, you know?
Oh,
so right. Volkswagen AG doesn't have an office here, so they can't make that decision. So the office that is currently here are basically distributors. So they will say, we just want to do what we can do to sell vehicles and make money and look after our customers. So this will have to come back to Burmas, who still has the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise has not been lost. No one has gone and bid for it or taken it away. So I think it's a good way to reintroduce the brand and see how it goes.
Just reflecting on our pre-chat just now, Rich, you pointed out like they had a reputation of breaking down quite a lot, but then yeah. Daniel, you said they are, you know, steely, sturdy cars that can be depended on.
Yes, you see, well, Richard was talking about, you know, before Volkswagen came into the picture and bought over Skoda, before they owned 70% of Skoda, at that time, yes, Skodas were basically, they were like Ladas. They were communist country cars. They were very badly built, very old technology, no updates, no safety features. You know, I mean, the few units did come to Malaysia. I can't remember the names, but one was like a funny looking hatchback. Another one was a sedan. And then there was one that looked like a small SUV. And, you know, they were terrible. They were just, you know, they were a joke. You know, the Skoda name was something you used to tell a joke about cars, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But they've changed now. They've changed in a big way.
That was the amazing thing. I remember that kind of change happening and just being like, wait, this is a Skoda?
Mm. You know?
Literally, people's mind were blown. As soon as they were taken over and the amount of development that went in and how they literally turned that name around to become something respected. That's kudos.
And you must remember in the last few years, not the last 2 years, but the years before that for like 5-6 years, in the top three of, you know, JD Power reliability, customer retention and everything, it's Lexus and Skoda, Lexus and Skoda, Lexus and Skoda, always in the top three, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So where Skoda was selling, they were selling superbly well, just like the Skoda Superb. And I think that was because they were actually built to a slightly higher standard than Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed when I was running around in Europe, UK especially, a lot of the cabbies that are in, you know, suburban and rural areas, they would always drive Skoda Superbs or Octavias.
Yes,
and
right.
Same in Europe, it's just mostly the suburban people who bought Skodas rather than the urban people.
Correct.
So that was quite an interesting experience for me.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Let's have a little wrap up, shall we?
Yep.
So that was Skoda, folks. We're going to stay within Europe when we come back, and we're going to have a little look at the Volvo XC40 Recharge. First impressions of that when we come back. You are, of course, tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm joined as usual by Arif Ruz and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. If you're only just joining us, we've had a bit of a discussion about drones and lasers, except it's not that exciting. But The potential excitement was peaked when we spoke about Škoda and whether or not they should be returning here to Malaysia. Now we're going to move on and talk a little bit about a Volvo. It's the XC40 Recharge. Fellas, tell me all about this then.
Yeah, so I remember last week in our last episode, we spoke about Volvo, how they launched this car, the XC40 Recharge. You know, it's the first all-electric car that Volvo has brought over. It signifies huge importance for Volvo Malaysia, and as well as for the rest of the local industry, because this is officially the first locally produced electric car in Malaysia. So, yeah, we spoke a little bit about it and compared it to all of its rivals, like the Mercedes EQA and the IONIQ 5, which was launched about a month ago. We'll continue that discussion later, but this week I bring you guys some new perspectives on an electric car, which...
Ooh.
Yeah. Just as a top line, I found it more normal than I thought it would be. Which I guess is a good thing.
What does that mean? You expected it to
be... You were expecting something abnormal when you drove an electric car.
Yeah, maybe it flies or it made some weird
right.
sound.
Okay.
But it's supposed to be that special, but it's still a car. Anyway, so later that week, I got to drive this XC40 Recharge because Volvo invited a bunch of the media to experience the XC40 Recharge. And I was particularly excited to do so because I haven't had the chance to experience an EV on Malaysian public roads before. And number two, you know, it's a Volvo electric car. They pride themselves on sustainability and electric mobility. They've got a very good reputation all around the world for developing electric powertrains. And also, they own Polestar, which is, you know, an electric performance car brand. We also went to a little farm on a hill. I don't know if you guys been there before.
You might need to narrow it down a little bit. I'm guessing there might be a few farms on a little hill. Or is it called
point.
A farm on a hill?
It is called a little farm on a hill.
Oh, okay.
As if you guys didn't know.
No, we didn't know. No,
genuinely, didn't know.
But it's in Janabai. So the whole drive was planned around getting from Shah Alam to Janabai and back. Yeah, so it was very interesting. And because we drove, I think, about 180 kilometers that day, the car was still well charged. It really dispelled any range anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I want to start off with the impressions of the regular XC40 because it's when we reviewed it, we called it, you know, the class leader. Since then, obviously, the Mercedes GLA is the current class leader, but still, it's a very, very fantastic car. It's a small, chunky-looking crossover with ounces of quality and plenty of space in the cabin and the boot. It had good ride, stable at high speeds, has all the tech and safety included as well. And I sort of saw it as like, perfect for an urban dweller. Big city, sprawling city. Though I had one problem with it, particularly the petrol version, the T5, and that was the powertrain. It had a 2-liter four-cylinder turbo with an 8-speed gearbox, which I didn't quite like. It had a good amount of power, but very, very little in character. And it was a bit rattly, you know, compared to the Volvo interior, which is super soft, super minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you're sitting at traffic light, it just feels like it's vibrating too much. But with this Recharge, essentially you're taking that out of the equation and then replacing it with an EV powertrain that promises to be everything but boring and unrefined and rattly, which are very harsh words. Sorry, Volvo. But yeah, I mean, once you take that out and replace it with the EV powertrain, essentially you're solving my only issue with the car. So wait.
Sorry to interrupt, but you know, you do remember that last week you said why Volvo is not giving you the V60, you know, right? Okay. I just wanted to remind you, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, continue. Yeah. Continue with your review.
The difference is I've already secured a date with it, so...
Yeah. Securing a date and getting the keys, two different things, eh?
That's true.
They can always FFK, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, how different is this XC40 Recharge from the petrol version? Visually, not that much. Apart from the blocked-off front air vents and a few little details like some new wheels and tires and some badging, if it flew past you, you wouldn't be able to differentiate it from a petrol or an electric version, particularly because of the construction of the car. The chassis was designed to take both or either electric and an internal combustion engine without much modification. So, you know, Volvo's flexing their muscles in terms of creative engineering and packaging.
Mm-hmm.
But there was some measured difference in how you operate this car compared to the petrol version. Because it's electric, it just changes how the car feels and how the car drives. And for starters, there is no starter button.
That's interesting.
You literally put the key in your pocket, get in the car, put your foot on the brake, move the lever to D, and off you go. And if you're thinking, how do I shut the car off? Well, just step out of the car. That's the answer. It is weird. I think, you know, it takes a while for us to get used to it, because when the engine starts, you know it's on. But with an electric car, you're not really sure in what state it's in. Mm-hmm. But Volvo says this is what electric cars will be. They're always in an always ready state, ready to go. You don't really have to sit around waiting for your petrol car to go through its cold starting motions and all that stuff. So in that sense, very, very convenient. Much more like an appliance, though. Once you get going, one thing that you'll immediately notice is the one pedal driving feature. And Volvo, in about half an hour, mentioned this like 6-7 times. They said one pedal driving. It means what it says. You control the car speed by just the throttle pedal. Step down to accelerate, maintain your foot to maintain the same speed, and lift off to slow down with brake energy regeneration. So the speed of your braking is dictated by how fast you lift off the throttle pedal. Interesting stuff. It took me some kind of mental calibration for the first few minutes to get used to it, but it comes naturally right after. I think it works well in traffic that isn't rush, stop-go traffic, cruising speeds, highway driving. They're all suited for this kind of thing because mm-hmm. the car will slow down by itself and, you know, you can manage the speed. But if you're making lots of turns at junctions, driving in, you know, city center, the two pedals just make more sense because obviously you can control how fast you can slow down. Luckily, though, if you're not into these things, it is a feature that you can actually turn off. And yes, there is still a brake pedal, and it does still function as such in a one-pedal driving mode.
Did you stick with the one driving mode, or did you switch it off and revert back to two pedals?
I did both. Uh-huh. On the way up to Janubai, I did one-pedal driving. On the way back, I did regular two-pedal driving. And I don't know, with these new technologies, brake energy regeneration, the brake pedals always feel a bit funny. So I wasn't too pleased by it. But either or works fine. I think one pedal driving is something that we would be using in the future more often, I think.
Okay, so what you're saying is, for an old driver like me, we grew up with three pedals and then suddenly everyone went to two pedals. And then now you're saying we should work with one pedal.
And then, you know, 4 years down the line, there'll be no pedals because we'll all be just transported in cars.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking away driving enjoyment.
I'm saying, you sounded very, very sad then. Oh, Daniel.
Yes.
It is really sad. But, you know, when you're driving on the highway, right, and you're following a car in front, you're back then when you're driving a car with throttle by wire, you keep the car, I don't know how to describe it, like you move your throttle a little bit. It sort of like primes the car to go faster. It doesn't immediately do that. You know what I mean? Mm. Like there's a little lull so that you can sort of like maintain, you know, the car's position, increase your speed by like 2 kilometers or reduce it by an amount. It's a very similar feeling. I don't know how else to describe it, honestly. If you get that, please let me know.
Okay.
But it's not counterintuitive. I think once you get it out on the highway, it just feels very natural. Unless you're one of those people who drives on the highways constantly accelerating and braking and not just managing your speed, you will find it difficult. But I think it's pretty normal, to be honest.
So is there any sound that comes out from the engine bay or anything like that?
No, it's just silent. There's no sound, weirdly. I think at slow speeds, you're in a car park or you're in slow speed areas in the city, the car does make a sound to warn pedestrians, but from the inside, all you hear is a golf cart battery motor whine.
So that sound in the car park, what does it sound like?
I suppose you want me to make the sound, right?
No. Does it sound like a car or does it sound like some engine or whatever?
It sounds like a spaceship.
Oh, okay.
Can you give us an example, Arif? Can you, I mean, radio is an audio module, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
I think. I tried my best.
Now I know why Arif is no more here.
Well.
Now I know, okay.
That goes in the highlights.
No, but actually it was a very good imitation because I've heard that before and it sounds very close.
Mm.
See? Weird, but accurate, at least.
Yes.
Anyway, back to the car. Driving the car with the new EV powertrain. Some technical headlines first. It's dual moto, all-wheel drive, 408 horsepower, and 660 newton meters of torque. So imagine, this is a pretty, by today's standards, it's a pretty small car. 660 newton meters of torque. You had V8s with that amount of torque maybe a few years ago. 4.9 second sprint, 0 to 100, which is irrelevant as usual, but over 400 kilometers of electric range, 40 minute DC charging, 5 hour AC charge. It all sounds pretty much par for the course. As I mentioned at the start, this EV powertrain does change the car quite a lot, and the lack of noise and vibrations is very, I found it very refreshing for a car like this because, you know, the Volvo interior is very soft, it's clean, it's minimalist, you operate it with care. You live sensibly. You like the easy things in life and warm breezes and sunsets by the beach, that sort of thing. that's the feeling I get when I'm in a Volvo. And this EV powertrain, because it's quiet, has no vibrations, the power and response is immediate. You know, it matches the car's interior and the whole, sorry for sounding a bit millennial, but it matches the car's vibe.
Right.
So I think it drives better too, weirdly. Because the fact that it's powered by an electric powertrain, the batteries itself and the powertrain adds over 400 kilograms to the car. And for such a small car, this car weighs about 2 tons.
Wow.
That's crazy stuff, the weight.
So which also means you need a lot of power to get it going.
Mm. Yeah.
So you add weight to give it more power, and then you need the more power because of the added weight.
Yep. And then you need a bigger battery because you've got more power and more weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then plug it into the wall that drains more power from the grid that's unsustainably sourced.
Mm.
That's the problem with electric cars. But anyway, that's none of our problems. This is the Volvo XC40. And I think, you know, despite this extra weight and the fact that it weighs 2 tons, a lot of the weight is tucked under the floor. That's where the battery is. And it lowers the center of gravity.
Which gives great handling.
Exactly. And, you know, we were going up and down Kara and around the back roads as well. I think it made the car more planted on the highways. And I'm sure you felt this when you drove the petrol XC40. Once it hits a few bumps, the car feels a bit unsettled. Right now, with the weight, the car doesn't feel unsettled. So it's, I guess, a positive unintended consequence of it all. But being electric is obviously very, very powerful. The numbers, 408 horsepower, 660 newton meters of torque. It's no joke. And you'd expect it to fly off like Dumbo the Flying Elephant. But it's not pointy or overwhelming, as, you know, Tesla fans like to say with electric cars, like put your foot down, 1.99 second sprint. It's not exactly like that. Instead, this whole powertrain, it becomes very manageable. It's very easy to drive and it's a bit more poised than the petrol. And I dare say, even as a Volvo, it's quite fun. And it's changed my perception of the XC40 from a kind of casual, unalarming, sensible, mojito by the beach sort of car into a crossover with a bit more sauce about it.
Mm.
For the same price, very similarly priced, right, Daniel, between the petrol and this one?
Exactly. So the question now is, if I walk into a showroom, of course, they're not selling the petrol one anymore. But, you know, if I see a petrol version, for example, would I be compelled to walk away from the electric version?
Honestly, I think go directly ahead for the electric version because the petrol version just seems a bit dated technology at the moment.
Mm. I mean, you're taken more by the technology.
The way it uses the technology, I guess.
Okay.
And then overall, I was very impressed by this, even this short media test drive. And I felt like the electric powertrain made this XC40 chassis much more complete and felt like a more well-rounded product.
Mm.
Back then, the petrol version just felt like, you know, it had an engine because it has to have an engine.
Mm-hmm.
This one, the electric powertrain, feels like it's been designed to accept that powertrain and that kind of power delivery. And I guess just before we get into our next discussion, I think one thing that lots of people have been talking about as we enter this electric vehicle era and how people choose cars and how people use them and how manufacturers make cars as well. There was an article that spoke along the lines of with great power comes great responsibility. And, you know, the reputation of electric cars in general, you've got tons of power, instantaneous torque. And generally, it feels like everybody's got the same recipe. But some people are starting to figure out that actually, you know, there's a lot of room for car manufacturers to calibrate the throttle and the powertrain to sort of fit their identity and their cars.
Mm.
In a lot of the European and American reviews, we're seeing a lot of disparity between brands and how they approach this. Particularly, somebody was mentioning that even if you don't like the looks of the new BMW i4, one thing that you will be impressed by is how it delivers that power, because it feels relentless like a regular BMW engine does, And people were saying about the Mercedes one, it's very labored, relaxed, but still very forceful. All sounds like marketing words, but how the car uses all of this power greatly dictates the car's character and the manufacturers it represents. So, you know, interesting stuff for the electric future.
And stay with us, because we have more about that to discuss when we come back after the break, don't we, fellas?
Yes, we do.
Wow, that was almost rehearsed. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We'll be right back with our discussion, will new electric cars kill snob appeal here in Malaysia? This is Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Farming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We're into the final segment of the show. If you're only just joining us, we spoke about bad roads, we spoke about drones and lasers, Skodas, a bit of a discussion just now about the Volvo XC40 Recharge just before the break. Now, sticking with electric cars, will they ever kill that snob appeal here in Malaysia? Daniel.
Okay, so... I wrote this article about a week ago. Will new electric cars kill snob appeal in Malaysia? Now, why do I mean by snob appeal? A lot of people buy certain cars because of the brand, the image, the branding. We all know that, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And over the years, you know, you can talk to someone and tell them, hey, please don't buy brand A because it's got a lot of after sales issue. People will still go and buy because why? I need it. I need it for my business, you know, especially small SMEs, fashionable items or cosmetic lines or anything like that. Or, you know, if they just TikTok KOLs, they all want to have that snob appeal in terms of a vehicle. They are not people who go and test drive a car and say, hey, you know, I like this car. The same goes for even some professionals. Certain traditional professionals, I don't want to mention who, they will only drive BMW or Mercedes-Benz, you know? If you go to their office car park, it's all BMW or Mercedes-Benz, you know? If you go to their place of work, it's always just BMW or Mercedes. To the point where these two brands in Malaysia offer a 6% discount for certain professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys know it, right?
Never heard.
Oh, never heard. Oh, because you're not in that line of work. If you're a lawyer or a doctor or an architect... You walk into any Mercedes-Benz showroom, you get a 6% discount.
Wow.
And the same for BMW.
That's SST free, essentially.
I mean, I've had friends in this three line of work. And, you know, over the years, they only buy these brands because they get that 6% discount. Not because they love the brand. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the brand, but, you know, I'm getting a 6% discount, I better buy it. Also, sometimes certain companies, when they allocate funds for company cars, like I know there's one big truck brand in Malaysia, they can't give company car a truck. So they tell them, okay, if you're going to buy a car, you must buy a certain brand because that car brand is associated to the truck brand in the bigger picture. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So these things happen. And then some people sometimes say, no, actually, I prefer something else. But no, they say, no. If you want that 6%, this is how you do it. Even BFM's biggest competitor, but smallest in terms of audience, who's based in Bukit Jalil, even they, when you buy a company car, you have to buy a certain brand. Yes, you know, and that's why you go to their car park, you see a whole line of a certain brand sitting down there, you know, but that's not the same with BFM, because BFM, you can buy a Porsche, you can buy a Ferrari, you can buy a BMW 6 Series, no problem, you know. So, snob appeal. So, I come back to snob appeal. Now, when the electric car first came to Malaysia, it was very lackluster and everything else. But in the last 3 months, with the lower tax, almost tax-free, the prices have come down. So, you see like the Mercedes-Benz EQA, is priced very close to the GLA, which is almost a similar car, but the GLA is petrol-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the Volvo XC40, the price is very similar to the non-electric version. You know, it's just slightly more.
Or rather will be, because the prices haven't been released yet.
Yeah, but we have already discussed the price, you know. So now comes the Ioniq 5. Now, the Ioniq 5 price, which we also guessed correctly from 199, it's more expensive than a Hyundai Sonata or a Hyundai Elantra. Now, until late last year, if you ask someone, hey, have you gone and test driven the new Hyundai Sonata? No lah, so expensive. Yeah, but it's well equipped, it's beautiful interior, it's got great features, top safety, top entertainment. It's got everything you want. You know, it's not lacking anything size wise. Also, it's got great design.
Yeah,
and then you have the Elantra, smaller version. Also, everything that I mentioned earlier in an even cheaper price. But no lah, I don't think so. That's what people will say. The Hyundai Kona, some will say, okay, maybe, you know, because it's a crossover SUV and everybody likes crossovers now. But then, so, you know, it's not so hot. Even when I did the review of the Kona, not much reaction from the general public. Mm. Now comes the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Now, what I've noticed is people are no longer calling it a Hyundai Ioniq 5. They're just calling it Ioniq 5, Ioniq 5, Ioniq 5. It's almost like Ioniq 5 is now the brand, okay?
Uh-huh.
And even though it starts at 199, people are lining up to buy it.
Huh.
Now, if you take the top model Ioniq 5, okay? Now, that top model is priced very close. And when I say very close means it's 259,000, which is almost the price of the Volvo XC40 electric. And slightly less, very small difference over the Mercedes EQA. And look at the Mercedes branding. Strong, dependable. Then you got Volvo, which is already now, you know, on par with Mercedes-Benz in terms of branding. Eh? And yet, the Ioniq 5 is selling better. So, when I talk to people who are booking the Ioniq 5, I knew a couple of people who booked the Ioniq 5. I know another one who's really crazy about the car, but he doesn't want to wait 6 months because of the long waiting list. I said, will you buy any of the other two models? He said, maybe I'll look at, you know, a Recon. I said, why aren't you looking at the Volvo, which you can get right now, the Mercedes, which is a few months, or go even higher up and get the BMW iX, which is, you know, about 50,000 more. Now, the reply is coming back, and then the questions back to me are all about the Ioniq 5 interior, the Ioniq 5 driving range, the Ioniq 5 technology, the Ioniq 5 features. You see, it's not about the badge. It's not about branding. It's no longer snob appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason is this. The Volvo XC40 electric looks too much like the petrol version. The Mercedes EQA looks a lot like the GLA. But the Ioniq 5 is just out there. You know, the design is just out there. It's so unusual, yet so inviting. It's a large vehicle, you know, and it's... Look at the interior, you look at the driving range, you look at the battery power, you look at, you know, the fact that it's got solar panels, you know, it's got all these little tech gimmicks. It almost feels like people who are buying these cars today are actually walking into digital mall and deciding which handphone to buy.
I was just going to say that. It seems to be that they're buying it because everything we've been promised in an electric car, this is almost stacking up to be those promises, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I think what's going to happen in the next few years is... Majority of the people going into this, of course, is the younger generation. The older generation, like me, we are like, you know. But they, whether they have the money or not, they are not interested in drive dynamics. They are not interested in, you know, badge branding or anything else. The branding is, I'm driving an electric car. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Not what brand I'm driving. Number two is, when they sit down and have coffee with their friends, hey, my car can go 510 kilometers, you know, one charge. Your car can go how far? And the third thing is, hey, my car got solar panel, you know, yours got or not?
Yeah.
And then the fourth thing is, hey, my car got autonomous level 3, you know, yours got or not?
These are the discussions of the future, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
So far, not so much different from the discussions today.
Yes, and then the last one, which I got irritated earlier was, hey, your car got how many pedal? Mine got one. Yours got three, old tech. Two, even older. One, mine got one pedal, bro. One pedal drive. Huh. So I can get my left leg manicured while I use my right leg to drive.
I was trying to think of, like, I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, you know, people just talk about two handphones, either about a Samsung or an Apple.
Yes.
Yeah.
And recently, you know, we've seen a lot of these brands like OnePlus or Xiaomi or
Redmi, Oppo,
all of those brands, right? There has been a lot of those full converts, anti-Samsung and Apple. But some people buy those things because, like, oh, you know, I can play more mobile games with it. The camera is even better. It's sponsored by Leica or whatever. But, you know, it feels like a fad. When those phones were launched in 2015, it created a shockwave. It hurt Apple, hurt Samsung, definitely took away some of their market share. But today, still, you know, an Apple is an Apple and a Samsung is a Samsung. And in this case, do we expect the Ioniq to grow into something new, because it's, you know, it's a brand new luxurious brand that, like Richard said, you know, represents everything we thought an electric car should look like. Is it going to survive?
You see, the thing is, I'll come back to smartphones as a comparison, because when I talk to a lot of young people today, and when they talk about smartphones, like if I happen to have a new phone, and the younger people around me will say, oh, what's your battery life? Mm. Oh, what's your camera? You know, how many megapixels? I said, I'm shooting not to put on a billboard, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need to put my picture on a billboard. I know some companies, they pay you to do that, but it's not happening to me. But I can understand battery power, and then screen size, you know?
Yeah.
So it sounds very much like the new electric car. What's my range, my battery power? What's my screen size? Because the bigger the center screen, more excited people get.
Yep.
You know, and then the cars have not got that kind of camera technology yet, but very soon they're going to have, like we spoke some weeks ago, you know, the selfie camera in the car. That's going to be the next biggest selling feature. You heard it here first. On the pillars, selfie cameras. While you're driving, you can just click, 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 click.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And the car manufacturer will be like, hashtag share your excitement.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail squarely on the head. You know, some of the things that are going to be really important over the next couple of years is going to be stuff like the level of autonomy of the vehicle, you know, and how good its computer vision is and all of that kind of stuff. And these are the discussions that we're going to be having, you know, how quickly can it decide whether or not that thing on the road is, you know, a plastic bag or an animal or stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for me, right now, the discussion is all about how quickly does it charge? Mm. How far can it go?
Right.
You know, and how quote unquote green is it? You know, these are the top of mind discussions for me and stuff that I'm thinking a lot about right now.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you guys something. Maybe you've not noticed it, but, you know, until COVID came along, everybody used to carry a spare battery pack. I mean, what they call a portable battery, right?
Power bank, yeah.
Yeah.
Even me.
Mm-mm.
I've stopped carrying those.
Same.
And I've noticed a lot of my friends have stopped caring. First of all, they're heavy, and then also, you know, they heat up and they're dangerous of, you know, blowing up and all that.
Mm.
So we have come to a way of working around how long to charge and make our phones survive, you know what I mean, during the day. Mm.
Not even just our phones, Daniel. I mean, I bought a new laptop shortly after the first lockdown.
Right.
And I don't have to charge that thing for 2 days now.
Exactly. So the electric car will be the same. We will not be worried about public charging or, you know, long distance charging, because why? We'll work out and say, okay, now we're driving in the city every day, blah, blah, blah. If you're going to go outstation for makan or visit a relative or a long holiday, we'll work out how to do the charging along the way or reach our destination and charge.
Yeah, just take your cable with you.
Yes. So I think the electric car surge is going to come, and it's not going to come with premium brands. It's going to come with just every other brand who can provide the features that we have just met.
Mm. Mm.
Good point. Really good point.
And you heard it here first.
But we're still awaiting that Proton/Perodua car before that happens, right?
Well, Smart is coming. It's going to be fully electric.
Yeah.
We know it's got battery technology on its side. We know we've got, you know, Daimler backing it on one side. We've got Geely backing it on the technology side. And then it's going to be badge of Proton. And it's not going to be cheap, but it's going to be below 200,000 ringgit. So that could be the next biggest thing.
What's just asking for a friend? What's the do we have a price for the BMW i4 yet?
No.
There's
no price yet. You want me to figure it out? I'll let you know next week.
I'm thinking around about what, 270 ish.
Well, it cannot be more than 300 because the iX is already 330, so it has to be, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, you're probably right. 270, 280, 290.
That's a good shout.
You heard it here first.
Exactly.
All right. That's it then, ladies and gents, for today's show. Folks, thank you again, once again, for tuning in to Cruise Control here on BFM. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget you can go back and listen to the podcast at your leisure. Go to bfm.my to have a listen, or download the podcast via the BFM app. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. My name is Rich Bradbury on behalf of Daniel Fernandez from dsf.my and Arif Ruz, the man with the news. This has been Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.